Welcome to Vital Voices, where we delve into the critical conversations shaping health and wellness in our community. I'm your host, Alexis Burrows. Today, we're exploring a pressing and often overlooked issue, psychosis triggered by first-time cannabis use. Joining us is Dr. Thomas Smith, a respected psychiatrist who works out of the Doctors Hospital Health System and Sanderlings Rehabilitation Center. Together, we'll unpack the biological, psychological, and societal factors behind this phenomenon, discuss the impact on young people, and explore strategies for prevention and intervention. So whether you're a parent, an educator, or healthcare professional, this is an episode you can't afford to miss. So welcome to the show, Dr. Smith.
Thank you so much.
We are happy to have you on. I'd like to say you are one of the first guests who's actually reached out to us with a particular topic in mind. A lot of what we've done to this point has been, you know, things that we've looked at, we've seen, done research on, and, you know, seem to be interesting topics to discuss. But this one is one that you presented us with, and we're, you know, happy and interested to kind of go through the conversation with you. You know, can you just give us a quick bit about your background, how you got into psychiatry and your interest in this topic?
Sure. So basically, I ended up in medical school a little later than I would have liked, which was good. And my whole point of view was going to be a community medical doctor, mm-hmm. serving the persons who were most in need of help, right? Mm-hmm. That was my focus. And pretty much excited about it, very scientifically minded. And so for me, when the idea of mental illness or psychiatry came about, it didn't impress me as a science kind of heavy topic mm-hmm. type of thing mm-hmm. until I did my rotation in there. Mm-hmm. That's just one of a couple of other things that happened. I realized that when I was having fun in internal medicine, which was actually the practice of physical medicine, mm-hmm. that there would be healthy people, but still there was something not complete in mm-hmm. our treatment. In my rotation in psychiatry, I saw how that completion of helping people was fulfilled, okay. right? And as I delve into psychiatry, I realize it's not so much it's not sciencey, it's that the understanding of psychiatry and how it works is so much far ahead than the technology that we have can't really keep up with it. Mm. What I mean then, it is only now that we're recognizing that the term schizophrenia is a collection of illnesses, right? That have similar symptoms altogether. When it was recognized all the way back in the early 1900s, it was described under the symptomatology that was seen. Mm-hmm. Now we know that it's an area in the brain or areas in the brain that are affected by a cadre of different neurotransmitters that mm-hmm. are being out of whack. And it's only now that we're beginning to understand through technology what psychiatry really is and how we can actually use it in our daily practice to make people better. And so my wanting to have a complete holistic approach about mm-hmm. people drew me to psychiatry. And my basic passion right now is adolescent. Mm-hmm. Why? Because it's an absolute, whenever you see mental illness that is appearing in the adult population, mm-hmm. you must understand that 75% of those mental illness seen in adults mm-hmm. came from on the onset in childhood. Oh, wow. And so that tells us that for the most part, those are missed opportunities of early intervention, mm-hmm. missed opportunities of perhaps having some kind of intervention that could have reduced, if not eliminate, those occurring mental illness that are emerging when kids are turning into the 18 to 21 population, 18, 21 years old. And so this is my passion right here. Mm-hmm.
you know, it's interesting. We've done a few episodes in the, you know, mental health related space over the past few weeks. We talked about PMDD and postpartum depression. We talked about mental health in the workspace. We talked about navigating grief and loss during the holiday season. And in a lot of the instances, you know, obviously most of those conversations would revolve around adults. And so as a part of the reason why we were interested in taking on this conversation was it gives us an opportunity to kind of speak to, you know, like you said, which your passion is, which is adolescence,
right,
and where that fits into the overall context. And then looking at, you know, just some of the things that play into that as it pertains to just cultural factors, things that exist in our space. One of them being, you know, cannabis use as a part of that overall equation. So, you know, wanting to dive into that a little bit, you know, let's take a step back, because obviously our topic is talking about the correlation between psychosis and cannabis use, particularly first time use in adolescence. Mm-hmm. What is psychosis? Let's start there.
Okay, right. So a very good working definition would be that it's a mental disorder,
mm-hmm,
that changes the way how one experiences reality.
Okay.
Right? And so there's a change in the way how we think.
Mm-hmm.
There's a change in the way how we perceive the world. And there's a change in the way how we interact with the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So some of the changes that can that is affected in our thinking would be, there's this thing called delusions.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who is psychotic may have some false thoughts. That's what a delusion is. Delusion that they are perhaps God.
Mm-hmm.
Delusion that they have lots of money. These mm-hmm. are different types of delusion. Or delusion that someone is trying to hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's one aspect of how psychosis can affect the way how we think, right? Or they might even have some very disorganized thinking, mm-hmm. right? Where you and I, who speak very rationally and mm-hmm. logically and basically goal-oriented,
mm-hmm.
we aren't able to make sense of exactly what the other person is saying who's experiencing a psychotic episode.
Right.
Another area of that is impacted by psychosis is our behavior. So sometimes people are not able to sleep. Their sleep wake cycles are disturbed, right? They are very disorganized, you know, taking showers in the public space, you know, walking the street naked, shouting early in the morning or playing music very loudly, right? And then there might also be some disturbance in our emotions or mood.
Mm-hmm.
That is perfectly exampled by the thing called bipolar affective disorder,
mm-hmm.
where persons are having these, well, in terms of layman terms, mood swings, mm-hmm. where they're manic, mm-hmm. full of energy,
mm-hmm.
spending a lot of money, high risk taking,
mm-hmm.
and then they can be depressive or mixed or a little bit agitated, where they're withdrawn,
mm-hmm.
low energy,
right,
feeling depressive, right? And so in a real sense, psychosis is a brain attack,
mm-hmm.
okay, that really changes the way how our normal neurotypical person experiences reality in such a way that their thoughts, their behavior, their emotions are all somewhat abnormally being processed.
Mm-hmm. So what is then the connection between psychosis and cannabis use, whether that's, you know, sorry, cannabis use, especially in adolescence, which then ties into obviously first time use?
Very good. So let's start off with some facts, okay, right? So cannabis is a known psychoactive drug.
Mm-hmm.
And by psychoactive, what I mean is that it has drugs that affect the way how the brain works,
mm-hmm.
right? Not only does it cause, and the key ingredient or chemical that does that is called the delta-9 THC.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a long chemical name, so THC is fine.
right.
Cannabis use not only gets you high or intoxicated,
mm-hmm.
but in some vulnerable people, which we'll talk about very specifically, it can cause psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, well, I'm so sorry. I really shouldn't say that. It is associated with psychosis.
Okay.
We're going to get into that. It's a little controversial. Mm-hmm. It's been controversial forever mm-hmm. and a day. We have been told, this is another fact, that neuro tissues or brain development mm-hmm. Goes all the way up to 25. Mm-hmm. We now know that was just a guesstimation. It really goes all the way up to 30.
Oh, wow.
Right. So what I mean by brain development, so the brain now, remember, this is the organ that is responsible for not only managing the way how we move, mm-hmm. right? But it has other departments that it manages the way how we remember things, mm-hmm. manages the way how we perceive the world, mm-hmm. manage the way how we balance things out, manage the way how we are able to set goals, execute plans, retain information, mm-hmm. connect with people, right? And so imagine as a kid, you had to turn dada and that mm-hmm. to I want to see father mm-hmm. and give mm-hmm. me that, right? Mm-hmm. And that's over a period of time, not just practice, but through neurons connecting together mm-hmm. as they're growing, help you to articulate your words and just put them in the sentence structure that you can be understood.
Right.
That also happens in other areas in your living, life. Mm-hmm. The way how you think as mm-hmm. a kid is a lot different from what you're thinking about now, right. You know? And so the unfortunate thing is during the time when we see psychosis most prominent in adolescent, it's around the 18 to 24 years of age, mm-hmm. that's a crucial time where brain development and hormonal changes are at its peak. Mm-hmm. Yes. And when you introduce a known psychoactive chemical in the mix, mm-hmm. you can see how haywire or can happen, basically, right? And so the controversy is whether or not cannabis does cause psychosis, mm-hmm. right? And to be honest with you, the correct answer is it's complicated, mm-hmm. right? What we do know, we know that there are a very high correlation between those who smoke cannabis and having first episode psychosis. Mm-hmm. We know that persons who are having genetic predisposition to mm-hmm. developing schizophrenia, which usually happens around 22, 23, 24 year old, mm. if they start smoking, then we see the incidence of schizophrenia appearing a lot earlier than those.
Right.
So we know that there is an association of cannabis smoking and a earlier onset of schizophrenia, mm-hmm. right? Outside of the 22 to 24 range.
Right.
We also know that there's a dose dependent effect of that is associated with cannabis use and psychosis. I think there was about the 70s and the 80s cannabis concentration THC mm-hmm. was somewhere between 5 to 7%, I think, okay. of THC. Now we know that through homegrown and advanced technology, that THC concentration is pushing sometimes up to 30%.
Oh, right? That's a large difference.
Right. And because of that, it is proposed that or hypothesized that high level of THC somewhat trends with the onset or the appearance of psychosis, mm. right? Mm-hmm. And that's sort of kind of validated in some populations, but not in all, because even though the incidence of smoking cannabis has increased with these high levels of THC in them, mm-hmm. what we know that the actual incidence of psychosis in itself hasn't. You know, so it's a kind of a mixed bag.
Right.
Right? It's a kind of a mixed bag, whether the egg came first or the chicken and the egg came together.
Right.
You see? Mm-hmm. And so, but we know for sure that it does impact young developing brains.
Okay. So what are some of the potential, I guess, biological mechanisms that might trigger psychosis following cannabis use?
Right. So we sort of kind of mentioned it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do know is that when we're talking about psychosis, we do look at the biopsychosocial
mm-hmm.
aspect of it. And now that you mentioned that we're having this bit of the cannabis into it, does that connect with the biological factors? The answer is yes. There are some inherent vulnerable people
mm-hmm.
That can develop a psychosis who smoke cannabis. Not everyone.
Right.
Right. So there are about, most recently, there's been some genetic identifications of genes that tend to be more likely to be vulnerable to developing. I think one of them is the COMT gene, COMT gene, mm-hmm. right? That gene is responsible for how dopamine is metabolized in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an important part because the psychosis hypothesis suggests that there is a high level of dopamine that causes some brain dysfunction related mm-hmm. to psychosis. So COMT is a kind of a gene that helps to produce the enzyme that metabolizes the dopamine. So if there is a kind of genetic weakness there, we can see how that connects to mm-hmm. the possibility of having a psychosis if now you're smoking cannabis.
Right.
The thing about cannabis too, and how it connects to dopamine is that part of the sensation of feeling high or, you know, feeling good about it,
mm-hmm.
it's because it is actually stimulating the reward center mm-hmm. of the brain, right? The reward center of the brain is just a collection of nuclei that helps to be make you feel good
mm-hmm.
about things. And that feeling good about things is because of the increase of the brain chemical called dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
And so then if you have a chemical that is causing you to feel good because it's producing more dopamine,
mm-hmm.
and if you have a genetic disposition that that makes you vulnerable to metabolizing the dopamine mm-hmm. levels, we can see how that person may potentially fall through the cracks of developing a psychosis if they smoke.
Right.
Right. That's just one of the many different things that could happen. I mean, biological factors playing a part of
mm-hmm.
the...
It's just, yes. Sorry, it's crazy to me because I realize that's, I presume, a part of the reason why people sometimes refer to it as dope. That's the connection.
Yes, yes.
I was today years old when I put that together. But yeah, so I guess, you know, outside of that, are there other, like, are there certain types of individuals? Because you mentioned that, you know, there's the challenge of individuals that may be at inherent risk.
Yes.
You know, what are some of the factors that may make a person more at risk to experiencing psychosis and I guess potentially from cannabis use?
Right. Right. So, and I think, and I like your question, and I think that's the basic way to answer it,
mm-hmm.
because in psychiatry, everything is so interconnected
mm-hmm.
that you have to go through multiple doors to get to a specific answer.
Right.
Right. So just to address that specific question, I will mm-hmm. say this, that we know that there's an interplay with society, the social aspect
mm-hmm.
of how it affects you internally, and then there's the internal aspect in response to the external,
mm-hmm.
right? Right, mm-hmm. and the internal has a lot to do with how we are built from mm-hmm. within, right? So we know that childhood trauma
mm-hmm.
Plays an incredibly important part in making someone more vulnerable, biologically speaking, when they use cannabis to develop a psychosis. And there is also the, ecocannabinoid system, or the ECA system. That is the system that is usually used or connected with the processing and metabolizing of the THC drug.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody isn't born perfect. Right. There's no one that's born perfect, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes there might be a disruptions or a modification in genetic makeup,
mm-hmm.
That is sort of quiet, and then sometimes it's not so quiet, and mm-hmm. that's when disease are prevalent.
Right.
And so any disturbance in the ECA, which is responsible for the metabolizing of the cannabis, that too may potentially cause some kind of predisposing of a development of psychosis if you, you know, smoke right. cannabis. There's also the possibility of kids who are born prematurely, you know. Remember, premature babies are still that much more at risk for brain problems, mm-hmm. because they are in the world a lot earlier than right. they should be, right? And so their process of development and maturation is a little bit premature,
right.
which makes them a little bit more vulnerable to develop, responsive to the social or the external environment affecting their inherent mm-hmm. vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But basically, we do know that there seems to be a connection with our genetic predisposition in some persons. Mm-hmm. Genetic predispositions and how they respond to a stimulus
mm-hmm.
or a toxin like THC,
mm-hmm.
which can disrupt or cause a disruption in normal brain development.
Okay. How do factors like family history or mental health predispositions? So, like, you know, if Grammy had a mental health concern, or auntie or mommy, how does that play into the potential predisposition or the risk of psychosis?
Right. So, first degree family members and second degree family members, there is a probability of developing psychosis, depending on how close you are. So, for example, I'll give you an example. So, if you have like monozygotic twins, one of whom, and monozygotic meaning that they share in identical mm-hmm. genes, right? There is a greater than 50% chance that if one of them has a psychotic event, schizophrenia, there's a greater than 50% chance that the other will as well.
Okay,
right. So, I mean, okay, and that's a perfect example. It should have been my last one, but let me just go through it. For example, so a brother or a sibling
mm-hmm.
will probably be about 13%, and I think a mom would be like, a parent would be like 9%. So mm-hmm. it varies out okay. all the way down to the cousin. So the closer you are to the degree,
mm-hmm.
first or second degree, the more likely you are to have it.
Mm.
So the question, though, to the first example, why isn't it 100%,
mm-hmm.
right? That mm-hmm. monozygotic kids.
Right. Because they share the same DNA.
Right.
Right.
So that really inherently suggests that it's not just the genes
mm-hmm.
that causes mm-hmm. the psychotic episode to right. evolve, right? It's definitely an interplay between what's inside and how it responds to the outside,
right.
or perhaps even what's outside mm-hmm. causing the exposure to the inside.
Right.
Yes.
I think it speaks to, like you were talking about, things like childhood trauma
yes.
and external stress factors, things like that may play a part into it, because if one twin went through a particularly traumatic experience and the other didn't, then that may be where your 50%, it's not 100%.
Exactly.
Those sorts of things that come into play.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yes.
So as we start to think about, you know, again, we do, to some degree, unfortunately, have a culture of, you know, cannabis use in our country. So obviously, this is something that presents as a potential challenge as you look around. So what are some warning signs or symptoms of psychosis that could emerge immediately after cannabis use?
Right. So just to be clear, I'm not suggesting, and let me correct it.
Fair.
If it is, it may happen that your first time smoking can cause a psychotic event,
mm-hmm.
right? But it doesn't have to be that way.
Fair.
Right? You can be inherently vulnerable mm-hmm. in those genes we talk about. Smoke, mm-hmm. and then one day, bam, that could be the trigger that,
right?
And so it could happen on day one,
mm-hmm.
or it could happen on day 25.
Right.
Or day 225, right? Now, so just to be clear.
Sure.
So there are a couple of things that happen. As a doctor, as a scientist, we basically only could see things that we could, well, measure things that we can see
mm-hmm.
or hear mm-hmm. or have any kind of, you know, perceptual, you know, alertness to.
Okay.
Right. So basically what we would see and hear of someone are those symptoms of disturbed perceptual, they may have visual and auditory hallucinations mm-hmm. that they are responding to.
Okay.
We might see them acting in a strange way,
mm-hmm.
right? So there are some positive symptoms like the auditory hallucinations and basically talking a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
There are some negative symptoms, which is the removal of things that we're expecting to see, but it's not there anymore, mm-hmm. like not moving, mm-hmm. not talking, those kind of things, or not even speaking, right? Now, aside from that, we can also have cognitive symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And cognitive symptoms include those symptoms that are responsible for decision-making, planning, memory, and interacting with the world in mm-hmm. a way that, you know, you can move from one table through the door to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Cognitive symptoms is a result of that inherent vulnerability, the genes that we talk about, that is not functioning in a way that makes you it easy for you to mm-hmm. remember and to negotiate the world through executive functions.
Mm.
So we don't see those. We don't see those at all.
Right.
We don't see those until they are very much so severe, right? But they can be seen, they could be noted to have happened. Like when you see a kid who seems to be forgetful, mm-hmm. can't get organized, or have difficulty communicating, and you know, gradually you begin to understand. Oh, some fantastic fantasies, mm-hmm. you know. Those are the kind of things that cognitive symptoms will definitely be affecting. Some of the symptoms, like I said, that would happen, that we spoke about earlier, is the auditory hallucinations,
right.
And the visual hallucinations. And then there are some delusions that have come about as well. They could be present while you are smoking,
mm-hmm.
intoxicated, or they could be present after you have smoked,
mm-hmm.
even up to 4 weeks post-smoking. You can have those kind of symptoms emerging, because the fact is THC, the Delta-9 THC, is a drug or chemical that stays in the body for quite a while.
Oh, okay.
Because of its fat solubility
mm-hmm.
and fat being everywhere, even in the brain cells, it can actually stay in the body for a long time.
Wow.
And as it stays in the body, it remains psychoactive.
Okay. I guess I would make it sometimes difficult to pinpoint, because if you're having someone and this is happening 3 to 4 weeks after, you might not immediately make that correlation between the two.
Exactly. Because
of the distance in time.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Ladies, at Oak Tree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI, top of the hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram movement continues. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oak Tree Medical Center, caring, compassionate, complete.
Pay your premiums anytime, anywhere, 24/7 with Galena's online payment portal. View payment history, set up recurring payments, download receipts for your life, health, auto, home, and marine policies. Got outstanding balances? Check them online and pay instantly. Guests can even pay for their loved ones' policies. Save time today by registering for fast, easy payments every time you log in. Visit Kalina.com to pay today. Kalina, always here, always open, 24/7.
Discover the ultimate in personalized healthcare with the Oak Tree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your health needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 816-4-OPP, that's 816-4677, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Primary Plus. Are you down with OPP?
Life is full of highs and lows. Your first set of keys to a new home, that frantic moment when you're locked out on a busy day, or the sinking feeling of a car key broken in the ignition. But in every one of those moments, Crown Locksmith Services is here for you. With commitment, dedication, and trust you can count on, we'll get you back on track. Built on turning a passion for helping people into a business you can rely on, Crown Locksmith Services is your trusted partner for life's unpredictable moments. Call Crown Locksmith Services today at 421-7800, where your security is our priority. Crown Locksmith, reliable, trustworthy, here for you.
Valor Security, our brand is honor. With quality services and professional treatment, we provide security you can trust. Whether it's protecting your home, securing your business, or safeguarding schools and construction sites, we're here day and night to keep you safe. From private event security to personalized escorts and expert consultations, our team is committed to excellence. Choose Valor Security, where honor, professionalism, and peace of mind go hand in hand. Call us today at 359-2005 or 605-7424 for security solutions tailored to your needs. Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oak Tree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center, caring, compassionate, complete. Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
I mean, so if you know, there's a family member or a loved one who suspects that, you know, someone that they know may be experiencing a psychotic episode, you know, how should they respond with it? What should they do?
Right. So the first thing you would want to do is to make sure that this person, your family member or your loved one, is in a safe environment. There is a tendency for someone experiencing psychosis to be overly aggressive, right? And that's because they're experiencing such a different kind of reality that it's making them anxious about the world, right? And that aggressiveness can be internally afflicted or externally expressed. Sometimes it's, for the most part, externally expressed, meaning that they can target loved ones themselves. And so you would want to be safe. Mm-hmm. You want to be sure, make sure that that person is safe. Not every psychotic person is aggressive mm-hmm. and dangerous, but you would want to know that, you would want them to be safe so that nothing happens to them mm-hmm. from other people as well. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that you're able to get them to a mental health professional as quickly as possible so that they can be assessed. Perhaps it's probably a overnight stay in the emergency room that's required. Mm-hmm. Perhaps they just need a further review into a psychiatric hospital.
Right.
After a discussion with the doctor, and it could be the first of many psychotic events to happen, and they might require immediate medication and maintenance medication to prevent those things from happening again.
Okay.
Right. So to recap, what you want is to make sure that that person is safe and persons around them are safe. If they are showing some unpredictable aggressive behavior, you can get family members or EMS and the police to help you guide them into the emergency room for an assessment as safely as possible. Therein, they will be psychiatrically reviewed after a medical cause in terms of physical cause has been ruled out,
mm-hmm.
right? Because sometimes psychotic behavior could very well be masking a physical illness, or the other way around as well. So after we are sure that it's not a physical problem, then we can look at perhaps assessing whether this is a psychosis that is reversible mm-hmm. or irreversible or acute or chronic.
Mm-hmm. You know, so it's interesting. We were talking, a bit about the adolescent side of this, but you know, how does that, what challenges are presented when, you know, someone who maybe, you know, has had psychotic episodes or, you know, is in a relatively consistent state in and out of psychosis, what challenges exist in transitioning that person from the adolescent side of care to adult mental health services?
Right. So thank you for that. So mm-hmm. that's one of my key passions right there,
mm-hmm.
that transitioning to child and adolescent mental health service to the adult mental health service. That's a big issue. And it's just been recently recognized as a big issue worldwide.
Right.
Right. Basically, why? Because at 18, in most countries, mm-hmm. that's the majority of age, right? That's mm-hmm. when the child becomes an adult.
Right.
They don't start rehearsing for an adult, you know? Right. One, you're a student,
mm-hmm.
and that's what you put it on your what do you do mm-hmm. form. And at 18, the same day, you are unemployed mm-hmm. if you are just out of school,
mm-hmm.
right?
That.
Right. And so that brings some challenges. The services that are currently set up,
mm-hmm.
They don't make allowances for transitioning from the adolescent to the adult.
Mm-hmm.
It's either you're a child
mm-hmm.
and you're an adult. As a child, someone who suffers from mental illness or psychosis, there's definitely emphasis on a multidisciplinary team approach,
mm-hmm.
right? So you have your psychiatrist, you have your psychologist, you have your occupational therapist, and you have your recreational therapy
mm-hmm.
and your educational nurse. Sometimes you even have your social worker and a case manager, right?
Right.
And the focus is on educating the child and the family
mm-hmm.
and developing those psychosocial support to prevent those things from happening again,
right?
In the adult world, the focus is on symptom control. Right? And that's it.
Difference.
Yes. Right? And the individual. Mm-hmm. So, there is no there's no major focus on family as it is done in the child and adolescent, child and adolescent mental health. Or there is some psychoeducation, but that team approach, basically, that is very unique and appreciated by adolescents in the child and adolescent mental health services, is not so much emphasized per se in the adults.
Right.
Now, some other challenges is that a child, an adolescent who has a mental illness, their feelings about the mental illness that they have might change, you know, because of stigma, right? The fact now they have to own this illness. Basically that, and now they have to make individual decisions about it. So now they're feeling a certain kind of way, right? And unless there is a transition team where there's a gradual crossover from the child and adolescent mental health service to the adult service, walking them through and slowly and gently handing over the reins of power to them,
right?
We usually tend to see a big disengagement. How much so? One study showed that between the 16 to 18 year old, there is at least close to 34% of disengagement for that age, right? Now, hear what? Those that are younger than 18, right? The disengagement numbers are very much lower. Those who are above 25, the disengagement is very much lower. So that tells us that that period between 18 and 25, there's a lot of stuff happening where the chronic mental illness patient who's struggling with their identity, managing their independent living, facing the day's challenges, they are really not really comfortable with engaging with the mental health service. And there isn't a transition. There's just a transfer. Today, you're a child. Tomorrow, you're an adult.
Right.
And that's it.
So today, you go from the pediatric side of the care to
the adult side of the care. Right. And mom can't sign off on you. You have to tell the doctor yourself. And the doctor can't share.
That's very abrupt.
That's exactly right. The doctor can't share information of your private information to your mom.
There's so many layers to this.
Without your consent. Right? And sometimes.
But then what if you're not in a position to really give consent?
Well, then that's another set of circumstances which may happen at some time, but not generally all the time.
Fair.
Right? Yeah, when you're acutely ill and you aren't able to make good judgments,
that's different.
Right. But for the most part, you are now responsible for making decisions for your life. Right? And some adolescent may not get it right all the time. And so therein lies the importance of having a transition service to make sure that the needs or the unmet needs of that specific populations are being met.
Yeah, because I imagine it's difficult to one day, especially if you've been suffering from any level of mental illness, to go from, okay, there's all of these people involved in my care, and it's all of this, you know, for lack of a better word, hand-holding through the process.
Correct.
And then that all just gets, you know, chopped off, essentially.
Yes.
And you're just, you're almost... Because, like you said, there's no... I guess that's why it is that idea of a transition.
Yes.
And not necessarily just a, hey, here today and then there tomorrow.
Correct.
Yeah, that seems like one that probably requires some exploration in terms of, like, policies, like, institutional policies, things like that, to allow for a better transition methodology.
I absolutely... Let me just go off record here. Mrs. Barris, I like how you prepare for these podcasts because you're right on tap. You're right on point. That's exactly correct. To look at the problem, they're multi-layered. It requires a rethinking at the policy-making level. It requires a rethinking on the administration of the health mental health service in that level. It requires a rethinking on the service providers level, right? I did a research that showed that there are some physicians, some mental health professionals who predominantly deal with adults. They lack the knowledge, for the most part, of how to support mental health transitioning adolescents or transitioning adolescents with a mental health illness, for the most part, right? There is also a change in the way how they, the service users, negotiate or use the services provide for them. So you're right. They're multi-layered of ways how we have to rethink mental health service in this country. Well, mental health service worldwide. It's in a different spot right now. Some have actually extended the service of child and adolescent all the way up to 25. Some have actually carved the a section of that, the 18 to 25, as young people or youth psychiatric care, right? Because they have that's a special special kind of population. They are able to drink, they're able to have sex, they're able to, you know, live independently. So there's a whole different kind of ball game with them right
now. There's a lot of things that now come into play that weren't involved before.
Exactly. They're unemployed. They might be unable to get housing, right? They are more likely to be high school dropout, right? And these aren't things that we wish for it to happen. These are the reality of it, right? And so, and there's a large segment. So we just can't wish it away. We have to deal with it.
It speaks to something we're going to get to in a minute in terms of the stigma side of this conversation.
Yes.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors and we'll be right back.
Ladies, at Oaktree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI, top of the hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram movement continues. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oaktree Medical Center. Caring. Compassionate. Complete.
Pay your premiums anytime, anywhere, 24/7 with Galena's online payment portal. View payment history, set up recurring payments, download receipts for your life, health, auto, home, and marine policies. Got outstanding balances? Check them online and pay instantly. Guests can even pay for their loved ones' policies. Save time today by registering for fast, easy payments every time you log in. Visit Kalina.com to pay today. Kalina, always here, always open, 24/7.
Discover the ultimate in personalized healthcare with the Oaktree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your health needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 816-4-OPP, that's 816-4677, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oaktree Primary Plus. Are you down with OPP?
Life is full of highs and lows. Your first set of keys to a new home, that frantic moment when you're locked out on a busy day, or the sinking feeling of a car key broken in the ignition. But in every one of those moments, Crown Locksmith Services is here for you. With commitment, dedication, and trust you can count on, we'll get you back on track. Built on turning a passion for helping people into a business you can rely on, Crown Locksmith Services is your trusted partner for life's unpredictable moments. Call Crown Locksmith Services today at 421-7800, where your security is our priority. Crown Locksmith, reliable, trustworthy, here for you.
Valor Security, our brand is honor. With quality services and professional treatment, we provide security you can trust. Whether it's protecting your home, securing your business, or safeguarding schools and construction sites, we're here day and night to keep you safe. From private event security to personalized escorts and expert consultations, our team is committed to excellence. Choose Valor Security, where honor, professionalism, and peace of mind go hand in hand. Call us today at 359-2005 or 605-7424 for security solutions tailored to your needs. Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oak Tree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center, caring, compassionate, complete. Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
You know, and I think this also kind of plays into a little bit, you know, what are some of the long-term implications of someone who has experienced psychosis, you know, as they're moving from, so obviously we know from the care side of it, you know, you have that, but just in terms of their long-term health and quality of life experiences, what are some of the long-term implications?
Right. So, if someone has psychosis, and this is their first episode, mm-hmm. right, there are three ways we can look at this. Maybe, and if this is associated with cannabis, right?
Right.
Cannabis use. So maybe it's a cannabis-induced psychosis, mm-hmm. which actually is, one study showed there's about 50% of all psychosis that are attributed to cannabis use, mm-hmm. right? That's just one study.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Another category of a person suffering from first episode psychosis is that it's a primary psychosis, meaning that it's inherently, the cause of it is inherent, like mm-hmm. it's genetically predisposed, right? And it could be the beginning of a schizophrenic event, right? So to divide those, then you can say there are some psychosis that are reversible, and then there are some that are permanent. Mm-hmm. Right. So smart money is to, you look at it and say all of these initially, because you're trying to not only help person, but you're trying to instill hope, mm-hmm. right? And say that all of these are, until otherwise proven, reversible. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we manage those cases as if they were going to be non-occurring if they are to follow the guidelines and management. Mm-hmm. Now, if they happen to develop into these irreversible chronic mental illness or psychosis, it's really, really tough on the person suffering from psychosis chronically. Mm-hmm. One, they have a lower than expected life expectancy from everyone else. Right. Some up to 10 years younger dying than expected, right?
Wow.
They're more likely to develop coronary artery disease, mm-hmm. or because of the disease process itself, or because they are not prone to be alert to managing their medical part of the of their life. You know, they don't check up on the doctors, mm-hmm. they're eating badly, they're not exercising properly, they're more they're more likely to start engaging in other health risky stuff like smoking cigarettes. Mm-hmm. The persons who suffer from a chronic psychotic event or chronic psychosis, such as schizophrenia and bipolar and schizoaffective disorder, they tend to have a more ill-laden history.
Okay. You know, a lot of the conversation, you know, does kind of lead into a discussion about policy and education and how you kind of find ways to equip people to kind of manage and navigate these circumstances, right? So from that standpoint, you know, especially when you're talking about from the adolescent side of things, how can schools, communities, parents, and then on a broader spectrum, even the public health system, you know, better educate and create policies for navigating the risks of cannabis use, right?
Yeah. So that's addressing one aspect of a mental health issue, and that's fine. We can do that. So obviously, the biggest thing is to educate people on the risk to their mental health and their physical health about the use of cannabis,
right?
Especially as an adolescent, engaging in such risky behavior because they are more likely to develop mental illness. The earlier they're engaged with a higher dosing of the THC in their regular use, especially if they are predisposed from their family history for developing that.
Right.
I would say, one, that we need to have ongoing public education of the dangers of marijuana smoking. I think that integral in the part of educating in our primary education and secondary education should be mental health training or mental health awareness, right? Nothing too fancy, but alerting kids as to what is healthy living. And healthy living isn't just eating right. Healthy living is balancing and knowing how your internal world, and when I say internal, I'm talking about your mental faculties and all that stuff, could maintain good health. I think teachers, educators, I think guidance counselors, and school nurses, they can play a vital part in intervening early enough so that if it does happen, we are able to stop it from getting a bit too out of hand before it turns into a chronicity. Public awareness, government-sponsored programs to bring awareness to everyone at large is a must if we're going to reduce the risk of cannabis use as well as cannabis-induced psychosis.
Okay. What would you say are some of the barriers that you've encountered in addressing this issue as you practice? You mentioned that, you know, you have a keen interest in the space of adolescence and mental health. And I presume you may have seen some instances of the first time episodes of psychosis with a correlation. You're being careful to avoid the causation with the correlation with cannabis use. But what are some of the barriers you've encountered in addressing that?
Well, first and foremost is the acceptance of the possibility that this is a mental illness, whether it's caused by smoking
or otherwise,
right? Family members. I mean, and I absolutely get it. One day Johnny was fine, right? Or there's always been, you know, a uniqueness about him, but that uniqueness wasn't something that he needed medication for,
right?
And so here comes Dr. Thomas Smith telling me that my son has a psychiatric illness, mm-hmm. right? No. And so it's definitely a life-changing event, especially if it's a chronic psychiatric illness,
right?
And there has to be an adaptation to make sure that you are a good family support for Johnny to prevent him from coming in again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just the enormity of accepting that in one sitting can cause people to, you know, wait, hold on, forget you type of thing, all right? So there's a lot of pushback on that.
Mm-hmm.
The second big pushback is, well, I smoke, ain't nothing wrong with me,
right?
And so if he smoke, ain't nothing wrong with him. Mm-hmm. He just need to, right? So in other words, what I'm saying is that there's a general acceptance that because of cannabis being a natural plant, mm-hmm. it cannot be bad. And I think that's not the message that we're saying at all, actually.
Right.
Because there has been shown to be some benefits of some parts of cannabis, health-wise, right? But we definitely know that it can complicate how the treatment is for psychosis mm-hmm. in a young adult. Absolutely.
Right.
So the barrier is accepting. The other one is any kind of appreciation that there is a direct correlation, right? And then just the stigma of it.
Right.
Stigma is the biggest barrier because this was your star student, you know, mm-hmm. this was your star son, this is your golden child, and now their world has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And in a very real sense, so is yours.
Right.
So there's a lot of pushback from that. I think we as mental health professionals can do a better job in the way how we address the stigma,
mm-hmm.
right? Being able to communicate that, you know, the medications along with psychotherapy and also meeting those specific individual needs, mm-hmm. biopsychosocial needs, can really lessen the chances of a relapse and admissions to hospital, and also that there's a potential of less disruption in their life, mm-hmm. and we can optimize care as best as we can if they would just share with us that opportunity to make sure that Johnny stays well.
Right. Excuse me. So I guess wrapping up, you know, our conversation, I guess there's one message you'd want to leave with our listeners, you know, about this whole conversation around first-time psychosis, cannabis use, adolescence, that whole, you know, everything that we've covered today. What is the message you'd want to leave with our listeners?
I would say early intervention is a key to much of what we see there.
Mm-hmm.
And early intervention comes with early recognition,
mm-hmm.
which calls for public education
mm-hmm.
and awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely more support from the government in terms of sponsoring or what is it? Mass financial support mm-hmm. for mental health care among those who are most likely unable to access it because of their socioeconomic position.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some of the things that I would want, that would say are key, mm-hmm. I feel key to you know, making some impact, right. lasting impact.
I'm trying to navigate the way forward.
Sure.
For something I imagine is a rather large issue. Even if you strip out the cannabis part of it and you're talking just about mental health, issues with adolescents in general. You know, you mentioned the issues with stigma and things like that. It is important, I think, that recognition one is a critical part of it, because so often in our culture, we like to look at things and we don't want to recognize what we see, right? We may see things like you say, oh, you know, he's always been a little bit different or a little bit unique, or, you know, everything's fine, he's just going through a difficult time, and not necessarily want to accept what we're seeing and then seek help. Through so many of the conversations that we've had on this show and in other spaces, you know, that concept of early intervention is a critical one, no matter what you're talking about in health, whether it's your physical health, your mental health, or otherwise. And so I think it's the same thing here, but that starts with, like you said, being able to, you know, perceive,
recognize, exactly.
Recognize, and then be willing to actually address what you're seeing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to have this conversation with us. It's very insightful.
My pleasure.
And it's a very interesting and I think important topic for people to hear and understand and get to know a little bit more about. So thank you for your time.
You're most welcome.
And then for our listeners, thank you for joining us on this episode of Vital Voices. Again, a special thank you to Dr. Thomas Smith for sharing his insights on the link between cannabis use in psychosis and the importance of awareness and early intervention. If this episode resonated with you, or if you know someone who could benefit from this information, please share it. Remember, these conversations are a vital step toward creating healthier futures for our families and communities. Don't forget to subscribe for more episodes where we continue to bring you essential discussions on health and wellness. Until next time, take care and stay informed.